Warning, Deepfix contains adult content and language.
So if you don't touch processed foods but eat gummy bears, this may not be for you.
And now, Deepfix.
Hello, and welcome to Deep Fix, where we get a fix of all of our favorite obsessions. I'm your host, Jen B. And this season, we are taking a deep dive into the epic Real Housewives of New York City, seasons 1-3. And this episode, we are breaking down season 3, episode 5, Hot Off the Press. Now, let's get our fix. Well, a lot has happened since our last episode, as I'm sure most of you know, and we'll start with the biggest bombshell. Bethany and Jill Zarin sat down for a reunion / one-on-one interview at Bethany's house in the Hamptons. So yes, hell may have frozen over, and we're going to have a special episode going over our thoughts there, including just the episode itself, Bethany's behavior, Jill's behavior, the growth of both of them, and what we've seen happen from then to now. I can't wait to get into it. And then, of course, Real Housewives of New York City premiered. I don't know why they're calling it a continuation. It's season 14 or whatever it is, because it's really season 1 of a new show. It's not even a continuation of Real Housewives of New York City. And I feel like it's telling that they had to call it season 14 or whatever they're calling it, because they're really trying to pick up on its current and old viewers in hopes that they'll just transition over to this new show. And full disclosure, I've only seen a couple of clips of the first episode. I haven't watched the first couple of episodes in full, but I'm not that thrilled. I just have to say, I don't know if I'm even going to watch them all, which is a little bit maybe blasphemous on my part. I should probably give it a chance, but I'm just not into the new ladies. I feel like there's a couple that I liked. Was it Erin? I think I really liked her, but I've just seen enough. And maybe I'll like Jenna Lyons. I can't quite tell. I heard Bethany say something like, you know, they're acting like the Pope has joined the cast. And she did it when she was talking with Jill, because they also broke down the first episode. And she threw it back to when the Countess, Luann de Lesseps, was joining the Roni cast, and Jill was like, we have a Countess, and acting so excited. And it's a bit like that with Jenna Lyons. I didn't even know who she was. I'm sure if you're in the fashion industry, you know who she was with the whole J. Crew thing. I had no clue. Her style, I'm not sure if I don't like it because it's just okay, but everyone makes such a friggin' big deal about it. I don't know. I'm a bit kind of over it. And then the pièce de résistance was I saw Brynn, kind of the young. I've heard that they're trying to make Brynn the new Bethany. I don't know. It sounds like she's young, doesn't really have much money, kind of starting out in life. But I saw her on an episode of Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, where she was talking about she thought Shep from Southern Charm was cute and that now they've been DMing. And I was like, girl, bye. I mean, give me a break. Shep is an overgrown child. He's disgusting. We all know about his sexual issues and romps. It almost felt like she was trying to get more PR and do that thing where if you hook up with somebody else on Bravo, you'll get more attention. And it just seemed desperate and yuck. That was my impression. And it did not make me want to watch the show. But maybe I should try to get myself through the first episode so we can talk about it later on. I'll do my best. No promises. I'll do my best. But if you can believe it, Roni is back with a complete new cast. Bethany and Jill have sat down and had kind of a mini reunion. Oh, and Crappy Lake premiered, which was Sonia and Luann. And I have to say, I haven't watched the last couple of episodes, but I've watched most of them and I loved it. And I think to me, it was validation that what they did with Roni was just not right. They should have kept Roni, the Roni we know and love. And if they wanted to start a new show about young people in New York City, then do it. You know, start a new show. do something fresh and new. Don't do it based on the Housewives. Because like I said, I feel like the Housewives format has just been ruined by the overproduction and really the women understanding now how to play the game. The whole teams thing, they're just starting drama to start drama. And that's another thing that started me off right from the jump of not wanting to watch the new Roni. Because from what I've heard, they start right off, and I know they had some bumps in the road because there was the whole controversial issue with one of the cast members that they then had to go back and cut out of all of the first episodes. So it's a bit disjointed. It doesn't seem like you're jumping in from the beginning. But they started right off shoving all of these women, most of whom don't have any real connections to each other, in a room at a party, doing a fucking lingerie party. I'm just gonna state for the record, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. There is no girls trip or girls night in the history of real girls nights where we all go, let's get together in some fucking lingerie or like, you know, bondage outfits and hang out together. It's so overproduced. They've done it a bunch of times on the show, on other shows, other seasons and cities before, and it's just not relatable. It's overproduced and it's bullshit. And I think it gets into what is the heart of the problem with the Housewives franchise these days. First off, they're not going back to their old format, like I say. You need to have interesting women doing interesting things that you're following doing those things, not just shoving a bunch of women into a party, a house, a trip, and asking them to all start fake drama with each other. It's why Real Housewives of New York with Ramona, Luann, Jill, Sonia, they all kind of knew each other and traveled in the same circles. Of course, you had a couple of people like Alex and Bethany who were on the outside, but that made it interesting and new. There was a core group of women who knew each other. They don't have to be best friends, but they knew each other. Also look at Real Housewives of New Jersey. Those first seasons they were epic. And again, you had sisters, sister-in-laws, 20-year-plus friends, all hanging out together. So you were following their lives, but then it was natural when they were doing things together. Now you've just got casting getting in there, casting personalities, not because they know each other. And it's bullshit. It doesn't work. And I've said this before too. I think one of the biggest problems is you've gone from a production company to a production company run by gay men. And no matter what way you want to slice it, gay men and women, although we have a lot in common and have fun together, we don't have the same vantage point. We don't have the same desires for what we want to see of these women. And I think that's their biggest problem, is they're letting gay men produce shows about women targeted to mostly women. It's just a big miss, and it's a big problem that I don't see going away for the Housewives. And in fact, I see it being a big downfall of the Housewives franchise. But like I said, we're going to have a special episode going over the Jill and Bethany reunion and sit down. So stay tuned for that. And maybe I'll get my ass in gear and try to watch a couple episodes of the new Roni, and we can talk about that later too. Who knows? No promises. But with that, let's get into a quick overview of the episode because it's turtle time. Well, episode 5 is really the episode that gets us kicked off into the heat of the Jill and Bethany battle. For Alex, this episode, she takes a back seat. We don't see much of her, but we do get one scene because she is on the board of Brooklyn Fashion Week and enlists the help of Kelly, Ramona, and Bethany to help select the designer who is going to close down Brooklyn Fashion Week. She gets all the ladies together at Cipriani's and also helps mediate a truce between Kelly and Bethany. And we even get a very quick appearance from Simon. As for Kelly, she meets with the journalist who is going to be writing the article that will accompany her Playboy photo shoot. We get to see her obnoxiously flirt with him until he asks her out, but spoiler alert, she has no intention of actually going out with him. She does show up for Alex to help pick designers for Brooklyn Fashion Week, where she picks a fight with Bethany, but then decides to make peace with her at Bethany's urging. But that peace causes Jill to send her a nasty email implying that Kelly has to pick a side between Jill and Bethany. As for Luann, we see her in the Hamptons with her daughter because she gave up her townhouse in the city when she divorced the Count. So she doesn't have a place to stay in the city and is stuck in the Hamptons. At least that's how her daughter feels. So Luann now needs a new place in the city and is starting to date. And because she doesn't have a place in the city, we later see her arrive at Jill's for a visit, where she becomes a witness to the infamous Bethany and Jill phone call. Ramona, on the other hand, is renewing herself. She's cut her hair, mind you, and now she's starting to renew all aspects of her life. She also goes with Alex to pick designers for Brooklyn Fashion Week and is really the driving force in keeping the peace with Bethany and Kelly. At least she tells them to get it together. We also see Ramona open up about her childhood trauma and her abusive father, which provides a softer side to her. And then, of course, we also get a preview of her plans to renew her marriage vows with Mario. Now for Jill, we see her take her daughter Allie to a 17 magazine photo shoot, where she is, of course, over the top as usual. And we get to hear a lot about Jill in this episode because of the tabloid fodder of the fight between her and Bethany, but we don't get a lot of Jill until we see her in her apartment with Luann, where she gets a call from Bethany, the infamous call, and hangs up on Bethany with, "We're done." And then as for Bethany, we see her get tipped off to those tabloid articles about the fight with Jill, which further enrages her. Bethany starts to have realizations that this fight with Jill is growing legs and that she needs to speak with Jill to figure out what is going on. But before she does, she also goes with Alex and the ladies to Cipriani's to pick the designers for Brooklyn Fashion Week, where she apologizes to all of them for being dragged into the article and then gets grilled as to whether she planted it. Kelly, of course, also tries to pick a fight with her, but they eventually make peace to Jill's dismay. And then Bethany makes the decision to call Jill to ask for a sit-down, during which Jill hangs up on Bethany and their friendship appears to be in ashes. So with that, let's get into the demise of Jill and Bethany's relationship, because it's time to mention it all. Season 3, Episode 5, Hot Off the Press, is really the point where we start to see Jill and Bethany's relationship bubble over. The beginning of the season, the first 4 episodes, we are starting to see the crumbling of the relationship. They're not speaking, the cracks are showing, and we know something is about to bubble over. But this episode, we see the eruption that leads to the ruins and ashes of Bethany and Jill's friendship. And of course, we all know it's with the infamous phone call that happens this episode between Jill and Bethany, where Jill hangs up on Bethany and says, "We're done." But before we get there, we start off at the top of the episode with Bethany. And Jill used to start off all of our episodes. She was the heart and soul, she was the center of all of the ladies. I always think production is talking to us in very sly ways, and this is one of them. So we open with Bethany. We're in her apartment. She's with Julie, her assistant. If you remember Julie, Julie was the assistant who came with her when on her new show, Bethany Getting Married. And this would make sense because this is all around the same time because, you know, Bethany leaves this season and is filming her new show. So Bethany's with Julie. They're sitting around her table with their laptops open. And I just love the optics of this scene. It's so old school Roni. Bethany, although she has her hair and makeup done, she may have gone somewhere for a photo shoot. But now she's in pajamas. She's in like flannel pants and a tank top. Julie has her hair just thrown up on top of her head. She's got no makeup on. And to me, it's just what I love about the old school Roni and what I hate about the new produced housewives. Where now they're in an hour of hair and makeup, everyone's got glam and borrowing outfits. This was truly reality. These women are wearing their own clothes that they have in their closets. They're hanging around like you would at your own house in flannel pajama bottoms and a tank top, shooting the shit. And so Bethany informs Julie that she has received an email kind of giving her a heads up that there's a piece of gossip about her and Jill's fight in the press. It's in the Gatecrasher, which is in the New York Daily News. It's now defunct, but it was Daily News's version of like Page Six. It started around 2004 as like a daily tabloid gossip column. And then it ended in 2012 and it was rebranded into a fashion type column. I don't even know if it's still around these days. But the column that's in The Gatecrasher is all about Jill and Bethany being frenemies. And I just love that phrase. It reminds me of the Sex and the City episode of Frenemies, which I love. And Bethany makes the comment, like, seriously, frenemies, what are we, like 26? And Julie laughs and she's like, I'm 26 and I don't have frenemies. And it's a pretty good moment. And Bethany goes on. She's just disgusted by the whole concept. She says, isn't that what Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton are? You know, frenemies. She goes on how everyone needs to grow up. And another reason I love this scene is because she's reading from the actual newspaper. She's got the article and the Daily News in her hands. They both have their laptops up. So laptops are around. You know, this is like 2009-ish. But newspapers on, you know, getting your news online was not a thing yet. And so even though they both have their computers sitting there, there's a hard copy of the Gatecrasher's article sitting in front of her. And the shot is kind of over Bethany's shoulder. So you can see the headline and see the newspaper. And the title of the article is Housewives Friend List Gets Skinny, which I thought was pretty darn good, too. So she reads the article to Julie, which basically is noting Bethany's absence at Jill's Saks event. It talks about Zarin Fabrics. It talks about Bethany's absence at Luann's Ungaro event. And Bethany points out that this article clearly gives a huge plug to Jill, to Zarin Fabrics, to her Saks event, to Luann's contacts at Ungaro, which in her mind says it all. She says, I wonder who put this in the paper. You really have to be Angela Lansbury to figure this out. Which for those of you who are too young to understand that reference, that's a reference to the TV show Murder, She Wrote, where Angela Lansbury played Jessica, who was a murder novel writer, but who also would solve crimes. It's a freaking awesome show. I used to watch it with my great grandmother at her house. She loved the show and it just made me happy to go back in time. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. Murder, She Wrote. It's a good show. And in Bethany's confessional, we get her saying, if it looks like a Jill and walks like a Jill, it probably is a Jill. It's a good one. I bet we can always count on Bethany for good ones. Then she also tells Julie that Paris Hilton has reached out to her. And we, again, go over her shoulder and we see her scrolling on what looks like the Skinny Girl website. It's kind of blanked out because they probably didn't have the licensing, but you see on the sides and it's just an old school website format, which I love. Again, bringing me back. But there's comments down the middle and on the sides, it looks like Bethany's books and some of her Skinny Girl stuff, kind of as the logos and decoration of the website. And Paris apparently left a comment saying something like, I've heard some interesting things that Jill Zarin had to say about you. And this really tracks because if you remember, Jill was recently at the Paris Hilton launch party for his new website with Kelly and Ramona. So clearly Jill has recently been around Paris, and now Paris is reaching out to Bethany saying, I've heard some interesting things about you from Jill. Bethany's upset because with her book Naturally Thin and the Skinny Girl launch, she's been in the press too much. And she's trying to explain to Jill that she's building a business. And as she says, it doesn't involve talking to termites like Paris Hilton. Boom, roasted. Shots fired. So for the rest of the scene, Bethany is talking to Julie about how crazy this has all gotten. And this fight is clearly way bigger than Bethany understood. And now it's getting to a part where she needs to call Jill and figure out what the hell's going on. So from there, we cut to Kelly, crazy Kelly, and she's meeting up with the writer of her Playboy article. And if you remember, she posed for Playboy. We saw the shoot in a previous episode. And so this gentleman is going to be writing the article that will accompany the pictures in Playboy. It is definitely one of the most cringeworthy scenes. So she sits down and the first thing she says is, oh my God, you're like the best looking journalist ever. Now I'm nervous. And she just continually is obnoxiously flirting with this guy. And she does this thing with her lips when she flirts where it's almost like pre-lip filler. She's always pushing her lips out like, and making them all big and puffy when she's flirting. And we see him interview her. She's saying things like, I think a lot of people are very curious as to what I look like without clothes. She's playing coy. She's kind of acting shy and like it's nerve-wracking. It's just really obnoxious. She's asking him, like, well, did you see the pictures? Oh, you did? What was I doing? I don't remember. It's really, oh God, gag me with a spoon. She does have one good line. He asks her, do you meditate? She says, no, I'm more of an oh yeah person, not an ohm person. And it's a good line, but I just can't help but feel that she heard that somewhere else. Like, it's not a Kelly line. It's too witty for Kelly. And then you can see why I think that, because it shows her being asked what book she's reading. And she says, any books that my kids are reading? The Giving Tree is really my favorite book of all time. Okay. He kind of goes with that into saying that he's read a great Swedish novel, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which, if you don't remember, it was a great book. I loved the book and the whole series. It's by Stieg Larsson. It's a Swedish series. It's a kind of a psychological thriller, and it was translated into English in 2008 and then became an international bestseller. So this is 2009. Everybody is reading it. But Kelly's response to him saying he's reading the book, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, is to say, I don't have any tattoos. I mean, she's got to be one of the worst interviews he's ever had. It's like, you can tell they even cut to him making a face like he doesn't know what to do with that. It's so classic. But then she also gives away her MO, because I could tell from the jump, she's not really into this guy. He's just like a nothing journalist, let's be honest. And you know how she feels about herself and who she has to date. And I knew she wasn't going to follow through with wanting to date this guy. But in her confessional, she says that the whole flirting allure is that you can, you know, to see if you can seal the deal. Will they ask you out on the date? And I feel like she just gives it away. She's not actually interested in this guy. She just wants to see if she can get him to ask her out on a date. It's like a whole game to her. So, of course, the interview's over. It shows the two of them standing out on the street, and he asks her out. And, of course, she acts shocked and gives him her phone number. Spoiler alert, she doesn't go out with him. So next up is Luann. We see her and her daughter Victoria in the Hamptons. Victoria is showing her some fashion sketches that she's done. Apparently, Victoria is really into fashion. And Luann explains that they spend all of their time in the Hamptons now because once she and the Count divorced, they gave up their townhouse in the city, which I love the way she puts that, because we later find out they never owned that townhouse. They rented it. So basically saying we didn't re-sign a lease, but she says we gave it up, which I think is a total Luann way to put it. And then in a total cringeworthy, typical Countess Luann moment, she tells Victoria, well, we're going to have to get you a stage over the summer. And you can see Victoria a little bit puzzled, and she's like, what's a stage? And Luann basically says, it's an internship with a fashion house. So she could have just said internship, but of course she couldn't. And she also mentions that she knows Catherine Malandrino, who's a French fashion designer, and maybe she can get her a stage with Catherine. And they go on about the fact that, you know, they are looking for a place in the city. Victoria misses being out in the city. She misses the freedom. She misses having things to do. And as Luann puts it, I need a pied-à-terre. She can't just say, I need an apartment in the city, because, you know, it's Countess Luann. Victoria also asks about Luann's love life and says, you know, are there any boys courting you? Which I'm surprised. I can't tell if this was set up or not. Because what 14-year-old wants to ask their mom, who's recently divorced, if they're dating? And in a rare turn of good parenting skills from Luann, she says in her confessional that it's way too soon to talk to the kids about any men. She would only do so if, you know, they're a serious relationship, which I love that Luann is putting that out there, because yes, Luann, absolutely. And then they cut back and Victoria says, well, Papa's obviously moved on, so you should too. And I thought that is such a unintentional, great dig on the Count, who basically left Luann high and dry and was off with the Ethiopian princess and God knows who else. In Luann's confessional, she's talking about how difficult it is, and she thinks it's harder for the woman to start over than for the man after a divorce. And she asks Victoria, well, do I have your blessing to start dating? Victoria says yes, but she can't date anyone who's, you know, 20 years younger than her or anything. And of course, Luann says she would never date someone who's 20 years younger. And now she's not going to date anyone who's 20 years older, which I thought is interesting because the Count was a bit older than she was. And we find out that Luann is going to start dating, but she's going to shoot for her own age. So then we cut to Jill. She's with her daughter, Allie, and they are going to a 17 magazine photo shoot. Allie is taking part in this shoot, which is all about prom dresses for your body. And I thought it's interesting because although Allie looks pretty, she's barely, you know, 5 feet, and she's a little chubbier. She's way more thin now. She said she's on Ozempic and she's been on it for like 8 years. But, you know, she's a little chubby. She's short. She's round. And the whole point of the article is supposed to be prom dresses for your body. And yet the photo shoot and the dress that we see her wear for it, you can tell doesn't even fit her. It barely comes to her back and they have it clipped on. She can't zip it. And so it's like, way to show young girls that if you have a round, short body, this is the dress for you. And yet in real life, the dress would never fit her. But I digress. So they arrive, they're looking at dresses, and then Kelly shows up. Because apparently Jill invited Kelly to come because she's a model and she knows all about kind of the model and photography world. And the lady there knows Kelly, which makes Jill so happy. As Jill says, she's with me. It's just, oh, it's such a cringy Jill moment. But we see Allie, she gets hair and makeup. She looks absolutely beautiful. She's wearing kind of a floor length purple and white gown with some black accents to it. It's got jeweled straps. She looks great. She's now on set getting the photo shoot taken, and Jill is in the background being so obnoxious. She's like, shake it, Allie, feel it. Yeah, Allie, left to right, hand down, hand up, telling her how to pose. And even Kelly looks at Jill. She's like, Jill, I'm never inviting you to one of my photo shoots, which I thought is a great moment of honesty from Kelly. But as Jill says, she may be annoying, but she's going to get you the money shot. And then in Kelly's confessional, she says that at first she was really perplexed by what Jill was doing, but then she realized that it was just a diversion. By Jill being over the top, Allie relaxed and got great photos. And I just thought, I just don't know what this is. I can't tell if this is Kelly realizing that she had said a couple of things about Jill being obnoxious at the photo shoot. So this is her trying to rein it back in and stay on Jill's good side. Or if this is just Kelly living in La La Land, but it's a little bit too much credit to Jill. That's just who she is and that's what she was doing. So then Allie's done with the shoot. She goes back to change and Kelly starts talking to Jill about the interview and the journalist for Playboy. And at this moment, you realize this poor guy, Kelly wasn't flirting with him because she liked him. This is all a setup for like a storyline for Kelly. Jill goes in with her machine gun questions, you know, where was it? Who, what time was it? Where were you? Set it up for me. As Jill says, she needs details. And I can appreciate that because so do I. When I want the story, I want to know the why, when, how, where. I want all the details. So Jill does too. And then Jill goes, Allie, you know, you tell her, how am I? I need all the details. And I laugh whenever Jill does this because she always pulls someone else into the conversation for confirmation, you know, tell him that I'm right. And she does this actually in the recent interview with her and Bethany when they sit down. She tries to drag Allie in and Bethany's like, don't bring Allie into this. This is just like you and me. You don't need to like have her there for confirmation. But we'll talk about that on the special episode about their sit down. But I thought it was funny. They're talking about him, you know, how tall is he? Kelly's talking about how smart he is. I'm not sure what it was that made him seem so smart, whatever. And then Jill can't help herself. She loves smart guys. She likes smart guys for Kelly. She likes smart guys for everybody. But then, of course, Jill can't help it because, you know, she always has something negative to say. She goes, well, my question is 37 and never married. Why? And then you see the whole reason why they're doing this come to fruition as Kelly sits there and goes, Jill, am I ever going to meet a nice guy? And Jill says, of course, you just have to stay away from the peacocks, which is actually good advice. But in that moment, the scene feels like such a setup by Jill and Kelly. It's almost like they're trying to replace Bethany with Kelly as the girl who can't find a guy. I don't know if you remember that couch scene in, I think it's season 2, where Bethany's saying, maybe, you know, I'm never going to find someone. I really want to have a child. I want to have my business. And Jill's telling her you can't have it all. I really feel like Jill is thinking that she can recreate this dynamic and kind of push Bethany out and bring Kelly in. But Kelly's just not the likable damsel in distress. She's a former model who's wealthy as hell. It's just, Jill, this isn't working for me. We end that scene, though, with Jill's confessional saying it's going to be hard for Kelly because she's picky. And as Jill points out rightly, there is no such thing as the perfect person. You just have to be willing to compromise. And I don't know if compromise is the right word, but there is no perfect person. So now we cut to Alex. In fact, this is the only scene we get from Alex in this episode. And she's meeting some of the ladies and her friend at Cipriani's to talk about Brooklyn's Fashion Week, because as she explains, this is the first year that she is on the board of Brooklyn's Fashion Week. She meets up with her, what did she call it in one of the previous episodes, her day gay, Derek, who looks just like Ducky from Pretty in Pink. I mean, look it up. For those of you, again, who are too young to understand that reference, Ducky is John Cryer's character in Pretty in Pink, which is a typical John Hughes 80s teenage drama movie. I mean, the guy's got the hat and everything. It's hilarious. So you see them talking, just the two of them at first. They're saying that they're not trying to make Brooklyn Manhattan. And we find out that they are selecting the final designer who will close out the final show of Brooklyn Fashion Week. So Bethany shows up, Kelly and Ramona show up. In Alex's confessional, she explains that she didn't invite Jill because she was still really pissed at Jill about her comments about the kids. They didn't really get a lot of closure at the Saks event. Plus, she thought Bethany would do a good job, and she didn't want Jill and Bethany to be there at the same time because it would just be nothing but drama, which, true. So, of course, Ramona's asking questions, and Alex explains to the ladies that Brooklyn does its own fashion week about 1 month after Manhattan's fashion week, and the theme this year is Manhattan Goes to Brooklyn, which I kind of think is funny because they're talking about how they don't want to make it like Manhattan, but then that's your theme, but whatever, I'm not in charge. But they joke the Manhattan Goes to Brooklyn theme is perfect for Ramona because that's basically her. So as they're all sitting there, Bethany asks about Jill Sachs' event and how was it. And then Kelly mentions that Ramona says mean things to her, but then tries to be nice to her. And Bethany inquires, you know, what did Ramona say? And of course, Kelly doesn't want Ramona to say. Ramona's like, well, do you want me to tell her what I said? Kelly says no. But then, of course, in the shady production moment, they flash back to the Sachs event where Ramona makes that boob comment to Kelly saying, hey, I heard you got your boobs done again. You know, I know you're posing for Playboy because Bethany said your boobs, one goes this way and the other goes that way. And I heard you got them redone. So even though Kelly didn't want Ramona to talk about it in that moment, in the editing bay, we flash back to the comment. It's so good. So Ramona and Kelly kind of bicker a little bit. Ramona is insistent upon the fact that it wasn't mean. It was just factual. Kelly's like, we talked about this. It was mean. Would you want your daughter to say stuff like that? They go back and forth. And then in Bethany's confessional, we get a classic Bethany line as she explains that Ramona does need to take more responsibility for her actions. And as she says, diarrhea of the mouth is not a real ailment. Such a good line. And then we get Ramona's confessional where she says, give me a frickin' break. You're posing for Playboy. How could you be insulted by a comment about your boobs? So then Bethany apologizes to the group for them all being dragged into the Gatecrasher article. And Alex looks at Bethany and straight up says, did you plant it? And I can't help but think at that moment that Jill is going around telling the ladies that Bethany planted it. And Bethany, of course, says no and says, you don't have to be Inspector Clouseau, another great reference to the Pink Panther, and says this was clearly Jill. It promoted her events. It promoted Luann's events. This is very obvious and has Jill's fingerprints all over it. Ramona says, look, you two need to work it out. It's your fight. And Ramona does say, you're a press monger, Bethany. What do you care? Good press, bad press. It's all press. And I think that's a foreshadowing to the walk on the Brooklyn Bridge. But Bethany says, you know what, Ramona, it doesn't really matter. The whole world isn't revolving around you. It doesn't matter what you think. It matters what I think. And it bothered me. And she says that she's been in Jill's kitchen when she's stirring it up with the press, like with Alex. And then we get Kelly's confessional where she says, oh God, Bethany's acting so innocent. I just can't stand it. And then Kelly, who never misses an opening to start drama with Bethany, says, well, you know, you did it to me. You called me Madonna. You went out to the press about me. And Bethany's like, you've got to be kidding me. I thought we put this all to rest. Like, let's not rehash last year. And then I don't know if a lot of people pick this up, but Kelly tries to do damage control with her behavior and comment the last season where she says to Bethany, you're down here and I'm up here. She very slyly tries to do damage control and says, well, when you do that, you're down here below the belt and puts her hand down there. And she's trying to change the narrative. It doesn't work because we very clearly know that that's not what she meant when they were at the Brass Monkey and she did the you're down here and I'm up here. But I thought it's just a classic moment of trying to rewrite history of in the Housewives. And so then we get Bethany's confessional where she's like, here we go again with Kelly, where she wants to drum up all this garbage and then smack me with it again. And so Bethany says to Kelly, you know, you came to my party. You said we were cool. Like, what the hell is going on? And Kelly basically throws Jill under the bus and says, you get upset that Jill's doing it, but you're doing exactly what she did. And Bethany picks up on this and says, okay, great. So you're saying Jill is doing this kind of stuff. And on top of the fact that it is Jill, she's doing it to bash people. Perfect. And Kelly, you can tell, is a little flustered, like, I don't know what Jill's doing. But she showed her hand. So it's getting a little out of control between Bethany and Kelly. You can tell the fight is about to ensue again. And Ramona finally jumps in and she's like, I didn't come down and take time out of my workday to listen to you bitches fight. Like, I'm done with this. Go outside if you've got to talk about this. But like, I'm done. Like, enough of this. And Alex jumps in, and poor Alex, she's so awkward and uncomfortable. You know, she says, okay, if you want to do this, take it outside. But if not, you got to be with me. Like, she's always too serious. And she's like, Kelly, are you with me? Ramona, are you with me? Bethany, are you with me? Okay, enough. You know, typical Alex, but it's very entertaining to say the least. So in that moment, Simon shows up and Ramona jumps up and like jumps into his arms. And she's like, you're here. We needed you. And we see at Bethany's confessional, she says she thought that Ramona was going to vomit when Simon showed up, but instead she totally embraced him. And as she said, I didn't get the Ramona and Simon sitting in the tree memo. So then we see the designers show up. They're showing their clothes. They're bringing some of their final pieces, explaining them to the ladies. Ramona gives it to this one gal because she's like, is this silk satin? She's like, oh yeah, it's silk satin. And Ramona's like, this is a poly silk. Like, your finale dress has to be silk satin, just so you know. And I got to give it to her. The clothes are all freaking terrible. They really are. And Bethany's confessional, she gives another great line where she says, you know, listen, Isaac Mizrahi is not going to be calling me to be his apprentice anytime soon, but what the hell is up with these clothes? She's like, I don't see anything that I would put on myself. I don't even see anything that I would put on Cookie, her dog. And then we cut to Ramona and she says, and that's the difference between Manhattan Fashion Week and Brooklyn Fashion Week. So good. But then finally, a legit designer shows up and they love him. He brings beautiful clothes. This guy's the real deal. The ladies all want to try on his dresses. They're just fabulous. So Alex and Ramona leave to go try on a dress, which leaves Kelly and Bethany sitting there together. Bethany, who clearly is just trying to make things be smoothed over, says, look, I thought this was all cleaned up. You know, I thought we were good. Kelly kind of takes the bait on this and they do kind of clean it up. They make it all right. And Ramona and Alex, in the middle of them kind of making it up, come out in their dresses. And Bethany's like, can we just have a minute? And Ramona's like, come on, just look at our dresses first. Look at me. Tell me we're great. It's pretty funny. And the ladies aren't going to give him a moment to clean it up. So they kind of clean it up in front of everybody. They give a hug. Everybody's happy that there's a truce. And then in Kelly's confessional, though, she claims that she called the truce and put an end to the conversation. It's like, this woman is delusional because she did nothing but try to start drama with Bethany. And Bethany was the one who de-escalated it for once and actually got things to a peaceful place. But such is the life of Kelly's brain. So then we cut to Ramona. She's at Fig and Olive with her friend Joni. We'll see Joni. We've seen her many times before. We're going to see her many times after. She's a friend of Ramona's and they're having lunch. And Ramona's going on explaining about how she's renewing herself. First, it started with the new haircut. And now she's going to be going into other areas of her life. And Ramona says something about, you know, well, half of our friends are divorced. And Joni says, yeah, it's like the swine flu and divorce. I don't want to catch either one. And for those of you who weren't around in 2009 or don't remember, the swine flu outbreak was this huge influenza outbreak. And somehow the flu jumped from pigs to humans, which is very rare. And in light of what happened with COVID, I've got to say, now very suspicious. What the hell were they doing with the pigs and swine flu? But anyway, Ramona continues to go on and says that not only is she renewing herself, she's renewing her relationship with Mario. And Joni asks, what do you think is bringing all of this on? Like, where does this stem from? And Ramona thinks that it came from her father's death. And Ramona then opens up about her dad and her childhood and how her father was very abusive to her mother. And as she says, it was a war zone in her house growing up. And she says her mom stayed in that relationship because she had nowhere to go. And we've seen Ramona talk with Avery in the past, and I love this kind of female empowerment that she gives to her daughter about, you don't need to rely on a man, you go out and do your own thing. And she's been really big on that, and this is where this all stems from. And Joni's a bit shocked. I don't think Ramona's ever opened up about this part of her life. And as Ramona said, she was always very embarrassed about the abusive life that she had at home. She had always wished that she had a picture-perfect family life, and she didn't. And so she hid it, you know, really for forever. And she explains that she and her mother would go to Brooklyn to her grandmother's house to hide for weeks on end from her father. And she has kind of an aha moment where she says, you know, maybe that's why I didn't like Alex and Simon and have this chip on my shoulder about Brooklyn, which it probably is. So then she explains that at Christmas time, the year prior, remember, it's about September at this time. So the Christmas before, Mario said to her, you know, maybe you should think about calling your father. He may die soon. He's sick and you might regret it because she doesn't have a relationship with her dad. And she says what's really wild about this is she reached out to her father. He came over for Christmas and they had the best time and they made peace. And she said, and then finally I had a relationship with my father and then he died 2 weeks later. And she gets very emotional. She's crying and you can tell it's a lot for Ramona. But she says, you know, his death released her and this is starting the Ramona renewal process. And I liked it because we got to learn a little bit about Ramona. I really do think it shed a lot of light on why Ramona is the way she is. It's why she promotes being independent to her daughter and is fiercely independent financially herself and was, you know, had a big drive to be successful and she was successful. It's why she tends to hold things in and then explode. That's a very common sign of people who are in abuse where they don't say anything and then finally they're just going to explode. I really liked this moment. I liked getting into who Ramona is. Again, it's a great scene and it has nothing to do with hanging out with any of the other women. This is Ramona with one of her real friends. None of the other housewives are around, but we're getting a real in-depth and personal look into Ramona and her personality. It's why these scenes are so important and why we miss them and what's wrong with many of the housewives' scenes and episodes. So then we cut to Kelly. We're in her apartment in Soho, and she's with Taryn, who we've never seen before, and I don't think we'll see again. Her assistant, who knows if it's really her assistant or someone she just hired for the show. And again, Taryn asks about the Playboy journalist, which I just can't help but think this is totally set up for Kelly to have this storyline. So Kelly explains that she didn't go on a date with him. Shocking. I called that from the beginning. And says it's because she didn't want to mix business with pleasure. Bullshit. She set this guy up. She flirted with him to get him to ask her out because she wanted to have the scene with Jill. I think her and Jill were talking about how to get her a storyline about damsel in distress. I can't find a man. Replace Bethany and the Bethany-Jill relationship. And this just is more proof of that because she had no intention. Poor guy. Then in another cringeworthy moment that Kelly has, we had the creepy Simon sightings. This is cringeworthy Kelly moment number 7,552, where she calls Jill Ben-Simone, her ex-husband, Mr. Big, and says there's no one bigger than Jill. I mean, she's delusional. And in her confessional, she explains that she's not going to date just anyone. As she explains, she was married to Jill's Ben-Simone. And he was the international creative director of Elle magazine. So the next person in her life is going to be a major person like that. I mean, freaking puke. It's so cringeworthy, Kelly. There's nothing likable there. But then in an interesting turn of events, she gets an email from Jill. And I love this because just like they did with Bethany and the Gatecrasher article, they do kind of an over-the-shoulder shot with Kelly and they show her computer screen with her email up, which is so old school. It brings me back just the whole format of the email. And you can see this email, it was sent on September 30th, 2009 at 12:15 a.m. from Jill. Like, what are you doing up at 12:15 a.m. sending nasty emails, Jill? So that gives you a sense of time, right? And this is what the email says. Hey, a little birdie told me you are all good with Bethany. I sadly am not. I thought you really cared. Good luck with B. You will need it. Jill. What the fuck? And Kelly's pissed. And Kelly says this is a threat, which is kind of a bit of a big word. But I think what she meant was, because she goes on to explain, you know, it says, if you're friends with me, you can't be friends with her. That's what she meant by a threat. But it got me thinking, you know, who told Jill? Is I could see Jill prodding Ramona, right? Because Ramona says this in other episodes where she's like, well, God, once Jill finds out that I'm meeting with Bethany, she's going to be all over me for information. If that's when Bethany and Ramona meet and Ramona says she's going to be all over me like white rice instead of white on rice, another Ramona-ism. So I'm wondering if it was Ramona, because the second that Jill hears Ramona was around Bethany, it sounds like Jill starts grilling Ramona for information. And again, Alex and Ramona were standing there saying, look at our dresses, look at our dresses, and didn't give Kelly and Bethany any alone time to deal with it. So they were standing right there when they saw the hug and everything go down. But who knows? She probably called Alex too and grilled her. You know, Jill, she wants details. And Kelly, as I said, she's pissed, and she says she's been so nice to Jill, she can't understand why she would send this email and why she wouldn't trust her around Bethany. And I think that email says so much about Jill's mental state and where she's at this point in life. Then we get one of those quick scenes, like a commercial scene. It's just like the one where Kelly Ben Simone's running in the street. And it's Ramona and Mario at the True Faith Jewelry office, and she and Mario are rehearsing the sales pitch for the jewelry, and she is correcting Mario, she's grilling Mario, she's nagging at him, and it's just a funny juxtaposition to her saying she's going to renew her relationship with Mario, and now she's like all over Mario nagging him. And in Mario's confessional, he says, you know, Ramona's a control freak, and I've learned I just better let her take the lead, because I don't want to butt heads with her, she's my wife. And it's maybe some foreshadowing, sadly, but they're going over their little shtick, and Ramona talks about the diamonds by the inch necklace. It's this big rope, kind of thin chain necklace that every inch has a diamond. And I've got to say, I wish Ramona would have pushed this product. It is beautiful. You could have done real fine jewelry where they're real real diamonds. I think she's wearing the one where it's like a diamondique, like a fake diamond. I think it's a genius idea, and she really should have run with that. She missed the boat with that one. But like I said, it's a quick scene, and at the end, Mario says, let's get a glass of wine, and Ramona lights up at that suggestion. So now we get to our final scene, the pièce de résistance, the Jill and Bethany telephone call. So we open up on Jill's apartment where Luann is arriving, and I notice that Jill is wearing the Hermes Oran sandals, those little flats that everyone wears now. I'm like, oh, Jill, classic and ahead of her time. Who would have expected? But Luann explains that she stays with friends when she comes out into the city because she doesn't have a place to stay, and Jill is letting her stay, which is why she's there. And Luann brings her a little gift. It's like this go big or go home glass. But all Jill can worry about is her outfit. She's like, I have to go change. I had a different jacket on. I need to like, it's like she's just starting to get a little too much about the TV appearance. Then we cut to Bethany, and of course, there's this ominous music that's set behind the whole thing. It's great production and editing. And she gets out of a car to call Jill and set up a meeting to talk about what the hell is going on. She's in that classic skinny girl red dress with a little red jacket over it. And Bethany says, if they don't talk now, this could be irreparable. And they're cutting back and forth between Jill and Luann, which makes for such a great scene, because you've got Bethany, then they cut to Jill and Luann, then they're back to Bethany. They've got this ominous music going behind the back in the background. It's beautifully edited and produced. So we see Jill in her apartment. You know, we just saw Bethany pick up the phone to call. Now we cut to Jill's apartment, and Jill gets a call from a private caller, which she says, I don't like a private caller. She picks it up, and it's Bethany. You can see Luann's face. Luann's shocked. Jill's shocked. And Jill says in her confessional that she doesn't know why Bethany called her, because at the Jill Stewart fashion show, they were done. There was nothing more to say. Then Jill does the shady thing, which now is commonplace for housewives' phone calls, but she says she has to put her on speaker. And you can tell Bethany is immediately suspicious of this. And she says, you know, why are you putting me on speaker? And Jill lies and says, well, I'm doing 10 things. I need my hand. Bethany clearly knows that there's something up, and she says, are you alone? And Jill goes, no. And you see Luann throw her hands up like, you should have lied. Why are you saying you're not alone? But she says there's friends there, but doesn't mention that Luann is there. And she tries to act like she didn't lie, but she clearly lied by omission. She did not tell Bethany that Luann is sitting on the couch with her, listening to every word she says. And we see throughout the call, Bethany's trying to talk. Jill's deflecting with things like, what does disproportionate mean? And then we see her mouth, oh, I know really what it means. Bethany is going on explaining that she hasn't told a single person about this argument, and now somehow it's become huge. She says, you let Luann listen to my message from 2 months ago, which is disproportionate. And you see Luann like, what the hell? And Jill's like, shh, don't say anything. And as Bethany says, no one killed anyone. No one slept with anyone's husband. Nothing enormous happened. But now, for some reason, this fight has become enormous. And she wants to sit down and talk with Jill about why it's so enormous. And Jill's response is, I don't think it's that important why it's so enormous. Another deflection, and it just says it all. And the music is great here because as Jill continues to deliver these kind of shut down, she's not engaging lines, the music in the background is like, boom, it's so good. Then Bethany is basically calling her out for talking to the press about her and talking to Perez Hilton. Jill very clearly lies, and she's like, well, I didn't talk to Perez. I think he's just baiting you. It's like, Jill, we know you were just with Perez. It was filmed. Perez is leaving messages to Bethany telling her that Jill said stuff. Jill then says, look, I wish you the best. You know, my life is very full taking care of my family, which I think is meant to be a dig to Bethany, because remember, at this point, she doesn't have a family. And then Jill just flips into defensive bitch mode. The look on her face is just so unlikable during this whole part of the conversation. She goes on to tell Bethany that, you know, if you had given a shit and reached out when Bobby had his throat slit from ear to ear, you would have, you know, you could have at least called. And Bethany reminds her that I sent flowers, I emailed you, you didn't respond. And then Bethany is kind of like, I'm sick of this, and calls her out. It's like, you know what? You were traveling, you were in Vegas, you were throwing parties in the Hamptons all summer. How was I supposed to know that it was so serious with Bobby? And you can tell Jill doesn't like being called out like that. And then again, Jill just goes in, you know, you were my best friend. We spoke 10 times a day. And to go from that to a mouth, I could never forget what you said to me. You need to get a hobby, which again, it's like, fuck Jill, that's not that big of a deal. Like, she didn't say, fuck you, you're the worst person I've ever met. And oh, by the way, I fucked your husband. She said, get a hobby, like, get over it. But as we know, it's not really what it's about. Jill's just looking for an excuse to make it like Bethany did something horrible to her, or at least something that she could talk about on camera. And as Jill says that she got a hobby and it was taking care of her sick husband. And again, Jill, in the typical kind of narcissistic mode, does the you shoulda called Bobby. You know, he put food in your mouth, traveled with you. And Bethany reminds her, I sent flowers, you ignored me, I texted you, I emailed you, you didn't respond. And then Jill does the more, if you were my friend, you would have done this. If you had cared, you would have called. Just the you shoulda. And Bethany says, well, if you were my friend, you would have been happy for me. But instead, you've done nothing but shit talk me and say I don't give you and Bobby enough credit. And she said, so I told you to get a hobby. And then you said, we're done. And then Jill ends the conversation by saying, you know what, Bethany, we are done. Have a nice day. And hangs up on her. And you can see Bethany is left standing there in tears. She gets back into her car. Luann is shocked. And Jill, of course, sits there. It's almost like Jill realizes that she was horrible. So then she tries to kind of backtrack and says, oh, I'm sweating. Why am I sweating? It's because she gives me anxiety. Friends shouldn't give you anxiety. And it's like she was calling to ask you to come sit down and talk about what the hell's going on. If that gives you anxiety, you've got something to hide. And as Bethany says in her confessional, it was a freaking disaster. And Jill and Luann continue to sit there and say how nasty Bethany is and that they don't want to see her. They're not going to be in the same room with her. Here starts the whole thing with, as Ramona says, Jill told everyone don't film with Bethany behind the scenes. And you can see the bricks being laid on that path, right? They're not going to be with her. They don't want to be in the same room with her. And we end the episode with Bethany saying that it was like a death and their friendship is in ashes. Well, as I said, that's the end of the episode, but it's just the beginning of the Bethany and Jill friendship demise. So join us next week when we take a deep dive into season 3, episode 6, The Ambush. And you can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, and anywhere that you get your podcasts. And as always, please follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. @DeepFix Podcast. Until next time, see y'all then.